Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're going to talk about how time manages our lives. Or do we manage time? Which one is it? How do we relate to time? Oh my gosh, there's not enough time. Well, we're going to learn how to work with time better. Let's master time. How about that? We want to be the masters of time. Yes. And to do that, I'm going to be interviewing the author of a book called Creating Time. That's very masterful just in that, Creating Time. Using creativity to reinvent the clock and reclaim your life. Sounds wonderful. And so to help us understand her book, the author of it, Marnie Makradakis. Marnie, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. I'm so happy to be here with you.
I am too, because we need you.
Isn't it interesting how time is, it seems, it's what everybody's talking about all the time. It really does seem to be the number one complaint and challenge that so many different issues go back to.
Yeah, and time has been around a lot, but we have more, it seems we have more access to it nowadays. We just look at our cell phones and there's the time sticking right out in your face. You can't help but see
yes.
it.
yeah. And we have fuller schedules and more expectations and the default is expected for us to, you know, do everything at once. And there's a very quick turnaround that's expected through technology. Right. And I think that's changed the way that time feels like it's moving, right?
Yes.
It feels like it's moving so fast.
I remember when it started to feel that way with the advent of MTV.
Indeed, yes.
And these snippets of, you know, and everything became, how much can you capture in your mind in a fraction of a second?
Yeah.
And now they're just sound bites and very, very little time. Most people are texting instead of having long conversations.
Yes.
They have
yes.
Back and forth, short texts. We're using time so differently nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really what inspired me to dig into this topic in a different way, because it seems like time really is changing. And the resources that we need, I think, really need to reflect the full bodiness of time, because when we think about time, we're usually complaining or feeling challenged by the linear aspect, the chronological, sequential part of time. You know, oh, how long is it going to take me? Do I have enough time to get there? I don't have time to add this to my schedule. But time is actually so much more than just the hours and minutes on the clock. Time is an emotional, psychological entity, and so I really wanted to explore it in a way that was very nuanced and multi-layered and more than just the chronology that we usually think of when we think about managing time or mastering time.
Right. And we have those two different terminologies, Greek terminologies about time that you talk about in your book, Chronos and Kairos.
Yes.
And I think it's valuable to and one of the wonderful functions of your book is to just help us understand time in our lives better. And as you're talking about, you know, we mostly see time chronologically.
Mm.
And that's the chronos, chronometer of time. But then you introduce this other word that the Greeks have for time, and it's a different word for time. And and can you explain that, Kairos?
Yeah, I think that it's a great place to start when we look at seeing time in a different way beyond just the chronological linear construct that it is. And the Greeks, as you said, have two words for time. And one is chronos, and from that we get our word chronology. And the other word is kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, which refers to the unlimited, unsequential, unbounded time. It's the spontaneous time that we don't measure. It's those moments of timelessness that are yet indeed time. And it's because when we're in timelessness, we really are still in time fullness. And I find that it's so helpful to just look at this construct. And these go back to, these are characters in the Greek pantheon, but they're still, these two terms for time are still used in modern conversational Greek today. And how handy is that to have different ways to label different types of time? And it's really, I think, a helpful beginning to just, as we go about our days, just be aware, am I in chronos or kairos right now? Am I in quantitative time or am I in qualitative time? And then extending that awareness to say, what might happen if I switch to the other one? When we're sort of, you know, kind of, you know, feeling very hurried and pressed and stressed for time, what happens if we let ourselves dip into that unmeasured, spiritual, numinous, qualitative time? And, for example, sometimes chronos is so effective to help us give us a structure to attain our goals, make our dreams come true. It's not that chronos is bad and kairos is enlightened and spiritual and good. It's that they're both entities of time that we can partner with. And the approach that I take in the book is not really about managing time. It's about reimagining time to build a foundation for our experience with time, to realize that time is not something that we have to just always be kicking up against. It's something that we can really embrace as a resource.
One way of looking at this comes actually from the Kabbalah and from the Tree of Life. And there are spheres in the Tree of Life, and they actually are in our bodies as well. So there's a sphere at each hip. And the right hip, that sphere, is known for its purpose. So when that sphere is running very strong, that leg, our right leg, is the purpose leg and the purpose hip to get victory in life, to get from here to there. And so I teach about this. And so when I teach about the sphere in the left hip, I say, well, what could that be if the right hip is about getting from here to there? And actually, the left hip is just about dancing and not caring where it's going and having a good time. So we can take this chronos kairos and actually see how it functions in our movement in life.
Oh, I love that. And then it comes to mind that there's another parallel as well, Peter, which is, of course, our right and left hemispheres of our brain.
Sure.
Which is, it's another way to say, yeah, it's not that one is, quote, better than the other. It's that they work together. And that we may have one brain hemisphere or hip or mode of time in which we're most comfortable or where we reside more of the most often, but we can strengthen the other as well to bring a greater sense of balance, of acceptance, of fullness. I love the hip dichotomy and yet balance. That's beautiful.
Right. And now there's another chapter in your book that has to do with multitasking versus, what is it
versus multibasking.
Right. I love that. Can you explain that? It's so wonderful. And it's just like the difference between chronos and kairos.
Yeah. Or the left hip and the right hip.
Right.
I think that multitasking is, you know, this is the place where we often are with especially with all the advances in technology and all the movement, and we're expected to be multitasking either practically externally as we have our little phone gadgets and all kinds of things like that, as well as just internally, all the things we're supposed to balance in our mind. And what multitasking does is it makes time feel like it's moving more quickly. It really tweaks the relativity of our perception of time, and it makes time feel like it's moving really fast. And so the more we're multitasking, it's kind of a losing battle, because the more we're doing it, the more quickly time feels like it's passing, and so the more we feel like we can just never catch up. It's this losing battle, us against time. the sad, sad irony of that, when of course time is all we have, it's our wonderful resource, and we scorn it as we multitask, as it comes, falls, as time just sort of drips and falls away from us. And multibasking is my proposed antidote, which is the complete opposite of multitasking. Multibasking is the art of focus, really doing one thing at a time, remembering what it feels like to focus on one thing at a time and expand our awareness of it. Take it all in. So your focus is in one place, but it's also widening to take in all of the layers of the moment, the sounds, the smells, the sights. The writer Diane Ackerman said, at the end of my life, I don't want to have just lived the length of it. I want to have lived the width of it as well. And when we multibask, when we take it all in while also focusing on one thing, we're feeling the width of time.
Now, one thing about your book that's so additionally special about it is that not only is it philosophical and understanding time in these more right-brain ways, but there's a lot of left-brain stuff in your book that I really appreciate. But it asks questions of our right brain, but it's lists and questionnaires. You have so many ways that we can analyze how we hold time and what we want out of time, what we expect and or not. There's a lot of not in that as well. And you give your readers an opportunity to really understand themselves so much better in the way they are holding time, or we are holding time.
Well, it's a really individual issue, and that's one thing that surprised me a bit, I have to say. The more research I did and the more people I interviewed and really got to speak with them, have the honor of speaking with them about their stories about time. You know, we can have 10 people who say, oh, time is so frustrating and time's really holding me back. But if you dig deeper, that means something different to each of those 10 people. Our time challenges, our time questions, our time experiences are so personal. They're affected by the way time was regarded in our households growing up. They're affected by our different experiences at different phases of life. They're affected by psychology, spirituality, space, environment. And so I really wanted to set out for a way that lets the reader really personalize this book for them, and so it really does become their writing their own prescription for their new relationship with time, hopefully full of suggestions and guidance that helps them feel like they're not alone.
Right.
But I really wanted to make this a personal process so that anybody who comes to this book, whether they feel like they're too busy or too bored, to seemingly very different time problems, and yet it's still the same issue. In both cases, we're feeling that time is keeping us from being the person we want to be or living the life we want to live. So I really wanted the reader to get that introspective personal process, and that's why, as you say, all the journals and introspective intakes are there.
Well, I'm going to go back to your book after we do the show, maybe later in the week, next week, and do a... work through some of these questionnaires, because I can see how valuable it would be for me. And I didn't have time up to now only because I do a show every week, and I really want to know the book that I'm interviewing about, and I also have to earn a living. So I make it a very try to get as deep into it as possible. And with your book, I just wanted to climb into it more and actually process myself in the book.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Well, and I also love that you have allowed yourself to dive in and play and just explore even just a little bit, because that was important to me in writing the book too. You know, I remember when I had this moment when I was writing it, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, wait a minute, here I'm writing this book called Creating Time. Anyone attracted to this book is going to say, I don't have time to read it. And I thought, this is an interesting challenge. And so I really wanted to, both in the design and content, make it a book where where the reader really does feel free to practice circular time. You know, you don't have to go from page one to page 200, whatever. You can really just open the book at any page and dive in to an anecdote or a story or a list or an exercise or an idea and let that sit with you, let that work on you all day. And so that's always something that I like to emphasize, that you don't have to read the book from chapter 1, 2, and 3. And in fact, I begin the book referencing a chart where you can pick your main time challenge and look on the chart to figure out which, to get a suggestion about which chapter to begin with. So I really want to support people who feel like they don't have time so that they feel supported in creating creating time to dive into the book in a way that fits in with their life.
Well, let me also say that wherever people look into the book, they're going to find entertainment. Your book is so entertaining, lots of stories, lots of understandings that are very interesting, and anecdotes and all kinds of things that, and the lists I really enjoy. You have two lists, and actually they seem to overlap or join each other on different parts of the book, page 29 and page 26 exactly, which is, what different kinds of time are there?
Mm-hmm.
So you actually list, and on page 29 you list dream time, creative time, nothing time, concentrated time, expansive time, self-care time, relationship time, private time, family time. I mean, it goes on and on. And then when you get to page 61, you're dealing with time is peaceful, time is happy, time is gliding, breathing, and stretching out to my fullest, time is the only thing that doesn't hurt, time is quiet. Time is flowing, time is moving, time is a spiral, time is... It goes on and on. And I like that because then we can choose.
Yeah.
What kind of time do
all
we
time
want?
Is not, all time is not created equal, you know?
Right.
That we're so used to just, you know, time being this, you know, this sort of flat construct, when time is anything we want it to be.
Right.
And, you know, And it's funny because in many ways we do, the terms good time and bad time are so great because it shows how we automatically assign a qualitative feeling to time, right? You know, I had a good time, I had a bad time.
Well, this is even emphasized,
so much more.
Excuse me, but this is even emphasized when people go to jail.
Yeah. Indeed, yes.
There are people who really make the most of it and come out of it like exemplary people.
Yeah.
And other people come out for the worse.
Yes.
And
look at that, how that's just, I mean, that's just a kind of an extreme version of what every day is. You know, just our everyday mundane. Some people come out of it extraordinary, expanded people out of the most mundane days because they're focusing not just on how we spend time, but also what we receive from time. And I think that's the shift, is that time management makes us, you know, look at becoming more productive, becoming more efficient with our time. And there's great use in that, but often at the peril of what we're actually experiencing. Because when we limit time to be just this chronological construct that we have to divide into these tiny little segments, we're losing something. We're losing the fullness of what we have to access, and time, really, I think our feelings about time are directly related to our feelings about life, which is why it's such an interesting topic. And yeah, just as the jail time, we look at our everyday lives and, you know, we make a choice. We have more choice about time than we think we do, I believe.
Well, not only that, but you have chapters on how to slow time down, how to speed
mm-hmm.
time up. So let's talk about that, because we need to see this. There's so many tools here that you offer that it makes our lives, I think, a lot easier to purposely go about learning how to, for instance, slow time down or speed time up.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's a place where we think we're powerless. You know, time either moves too fast or too slow, And yet we know time is relative. We know it from science and Einstein. We know it when we compare a half an hour with an enjoyable conversation with someone we really enjoy to half an hour in the dentist chair. You know, we know that time is relative.
Right.
And I just became fascinated with, well, since we know this and we all have access to this experience, can we consciously control this? What if we could make time feel like it's moving faster or make time feel like it's moving slower at will? And that was one of the most delightful pieces of this work for me that I continue to employ in my life all the time. And we have more control of that than we think we do. And with some really simple tools, using the body, accessing the imagination, we can trick our play tricks on our perception, but do it to our advantage instead of just letting it happen to us.
Right.
We can really, when we know we want to slow time, stretch time, we can make a conscious decision to do that. And vice versa, when we want time to just hurry up already, we can play with that as well.
Well, one of the ways that I've watched time is through my exercise. I'm a lifelong runner, and I also am a swimmer. And they're both, you're by yourself, basically. You're in the water. You really can't have a conversation with anyone doing laps. And running, you can be certainly conversational and social and run with others, but often us runners run alone. And how do we clock ourselves? What do we pay attention to?
Mm-hmm.
How do we watch the watch? You know, for years I ran without a watch because I just didn't want to know about how fast I was running or whatever. I just felt, I know the distances basically, and I just was out there being with myself, with nature, and doing that. But I have a twin brother, and he clocks every step he takes in his runs. And I guess that's how he manages his time. And then I was looking at swimming, and whether or not I'll count laps. And so I'm very involved in making sure I know which lap I'm in. And then I watch the clock as I'm counting laps and all that. And then there are times where I just say, you know, I don't want to bother doing that. I want to just be with myself. And I know I'm going to swim for, let's say, 35, 40 minutes. So I just have a good time in the water. And so those are different ways that we manage time. How often do people watch their watches?
Yes. Yeah, and I have an exercise in the book, actually, that is a new version of a stopwatch, and it is called a stop, period, watch, period. So instead of being on the stopwatch in those moments when we feel like we need a stopwatch, often the very best way that we can feel like time is moving more slowly, time is giving us all we need, is to instead stop, period, watch, period. And, I love what you've brought forward about the different ways to track time in the pool or while jogging. It's the same thing with life. It's the same thing with life. We can explore different ways to tell time. And the tell time is interesting because it puts us in the active seat. It reminds us that we get to tell time what we need from it.
Right.
One of the subtle changes, and it's so tiny, it's almost laughable, but it actually does really make a difference, is instead of asking, what time is it? Ask, what does the clock say? And it's such a small thing, but it does. It's a subtle way to remind ourselves that the clock is not in charge of us, that we get to choose. We get to make choices not only how we use our time, but how we feel about time, too.
Right.
And it's also a great conversation starter. If you say, what does the clock say? Someone says, what? You say, oh, I'm working on a new relationship with time. And they say, well, what does that mean? And it's great because it gets people talking about time in a new way besides just our regular default of, you know, oh, I'm too busy, I'm so stressed, there's not enough time, time's moving so fast, you know, the things that we kind of knee-jerk reaction go to.
And you offer opportunities in the book about metaphors of time. And how we can see time. You have examples in the book of time being an ocean, or time being a newborn, time being a camera, or time being a river. And if we can start feeling time in those metaphors, sensing what time means in relationship to, let's say, a newborn, And so, or even a river.
Yes. And again, the power here is the choice, that we get to choose the metaphor. We can play around with different metaphors, and what if time was bubblegum, what if time was Play-Doh, what if time was paint. We can play around, and then we get to choose the ones that we want, sometimes even in different events, in different moments, in different environments. That's a great way to play with the power of choice. Again, reminding us, time does not control us. We get to make our choices and our decisions about our experience of time.
Right. And now I want to talk about a deeper part of it, and it's using time through creating time through gratitude, through love, understanding how to be with time to enrich our lives better. And I think that's beautiful that you include that in the book, that, okay, so let's talk about quality of time. And also you talk about divine timing, synchronicity. So it's kind of letting go of time and being in the experience of life expression. And what a great opportunity it is to see time through those eyes as well.
Yeah. And but time's a doorway. Time's a doorway to experience the fullness, the richness, the vastness of life. And that is such a shift from our typical response, which is, oh, time's keeping me from doing what I want, or time is something I have to master or manage. And I think time is not something to master or manage. Time is just something to partner with. You know, what's time where our best friend, you know, our lover, our partner,
that we
can work together to create this life. And I find it to be really supportive. It's a very big difference to go through a day, you know, just being worried about time, being anxious, and it's remarkable how much actual time, how much chronos time, is absorbed by stress and anxiety.
Right, sure.
Know, when you think of how much time that, you know, we use worrying about the past or worrying about the future or stressing out or feeling late or being stressed. Take away that, and all of a sudden, that's a lot of time that you could do really wonderful things with.
So instead
of joy and freedom.
Right. Instead of being a victim of time, let's be the master of time.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so we only have a couple of minutes left, and I want people to know how to reach you, how to get your book, Creating Time.
Yes. The book is Creating Time, Using Creativity to Reinvent the Clock and Reclaim Your Life. You can get it at any major bookseller, any bookseller online or on our wonderful, amazing bookstores that exist in the physical world. You can reach me at my website, which is called Artellaland, Artellaland, Artellaland.com. Artellaland is a playland for artists, writers, creative spirits, creative entrepreneurs, spiritual seekers coming together to explore bringing more creativity into life. And I also have a wonderful Facebook community for Creating Time readers, which is at Facebook, Creating Time. And it's terrific because there are people who are talking about a new sense of time and exploring it through different metaphors and different doorways. And that's just a wonderful place. So, of course, I invite your wonderful listeners to come connect in any of those ways.
Right, and how? Let's talk about how they spell your name, Marnie Makradakis.
Marnie is M-A-R-N-E-Y, and Makradakis is I have a wonderful Greek husband that from whom I have this delightfully exotic last name, Makradakis, M-A-K-R-I-D-A-K-I-S.
Oh, that's great. So this has been such a pleasure talking with you. It's such a gift that you're offering with this book that it helps our lives in so many ways. And I really appreciate you being on Energy Stew and talking about it. It's so much fun talking with you.
Oh, I agree. I really enjoyed the conversation, Peter, and I appreciate your support and delighted to have this conversation. The more people are talking about new kinds of supportive time, I think that that has the potential to really trigger a paradigm shift that's important. When you look at a topic of time, it's something we all have right. in common, and it's our great resource that we can use to change the world.
Thank you, Marnie.
Thank you for having me here.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HeartRiver.org. Or I'm in New York at 212-222-7748. And thank you so much for listening.